Manuscript Releases, Volume 5, Numbers 260 to 346. M.R., Number 333. Our Health Message. I have seen in vision that tobacco was a filthy weed and that it must be laid aside or given up. Said my accompanying angel, "If it is an idol, it is high time it was given up, and unless it is given up, the frown of God will be upon the one that uses it, and he cannot be sealed with the seal of the living God. If it is used as a medicine, go to God. He is the great physician, and those that use the filthy weed for medicine greatly dishonor God." I then saw a lack of cleanliness among Sabbath keepers. I saw that God would not acknowledge an untidy and unclean person as a Christian. I saw that these things should meet with an open rebuke, and if there was not a change immediately in some that profess the truth, in these things, they should be put out of the camp. If we wish good health, we must take special care of the health God has given us. Deny the unhealthy appetite. Eat more coarse food with little grease. Then you can consistently ask God's blessing upon such food as is congenial with your natures. We must pray as did Solomon for food convenient for us, and act accordingly, and God will bless us. Some Sabbath keepers make a god of their bellies, waste their means in getting rich food. Such I saw, if saved at all, would know what pinching is unless they deny their appetites and eat to the glory of God. There are but few who eat to the glory of God. Early this morning we were called up to go to Brother Loughborough's. They think their child is dying. Dress hastily and go to the afflicted family. The little one was dying. This is a dark, dreary world. The whole human family are subject to disease, sorrow, and death. If you had left off tobacco entirely and never touched that filthy weed after you had started the last time, your appetite for strong drink you could the more readily have subdued. I have been thinking long and patiently upon what you said to me in regard to your wearing hoops. I am prepared to answer, do not put on hoops by any means. I believe that God will have his people distinct from the nations around them. They are peculiar, and should we strive to abolish or put away every sign that marks us as peculiar? No, no. Let us preserve the signs which distinguish us in dress, as well as articles of faith. By putting on hoops, however small, you not only give countenance, but a powerful influence to this ridiculous fashion, and you place yourself where you could not reprove those who may choose to wear the larger hoops. Stand clear from this disgusting fashion. My mouth is open. I shall speak plain upon hoops in the next review. Many interpret the visions to suit their own peculiar ideas, and God is grieved, his church weakened, and the cause dishonored by childish contentions and by misinterpreting what he has seen fit to reveal. I saw that God would soon remove all light given through visions unless they were appreciated and the church make a better use of them than they have done. The church, with humble hearts, must in meekness search carefully for their own wrongs which have separated God from them. Hoops, I saw, should be discarded from the ranks of Sabbath keepers. Their influence and practice should be a rebuke to this ridiculous fashion which has been a screen to iniquity. Its first rise was from a house of ill fame in Paris. Never was such iniquity practiced as since this hoop invention. Never were there so many murders of infants, and never were virtue and modesty so rare. It has almost departed from this enlightened land. You write about quilted skirts, that it is wrong to wear heavy skirts. My answer you will see in next paper. See the Review and Herald, June 25, 1861. Page 37, reprinted in Testimonies, Volume 1, pages 274 to 287. If that does not convince and settle your mind, please write again. The more I dwell upon this matter, the plainer is it to me that the wearing of hoops is one of the abominations of the land that God would have us utterly discard. Our practice and example should be a standing rebuke to this ridiculous fashion. I have been trying to find time to write to you for some days, but there is so much to be done I cannot do half I wish to. Adelia and the children have been examined today. The doctor pronounces Adelia sick. We shall have their written prescriptions this week. Then you can know more in regard to them. They have all styles of dress here. Some are very becoming, if not so short. We shall get patterns from this place, and I think we can get out a style of dress more healthful than we now wear, and yet not be bloomer or the American costume. Our dresses, according to my idea, should be from 4 to 6 inches shorter than now worn, and should in no case reach lower than the top of the heel of the shoe, and could be a little shorter even than this with all modesty. I am going to get up a style of dress on my own hook, which will accord perfectly with that which has been shown me. Health demands it. Our feeble women must dispense with heavy skirts and tight waists if they value health. Brother Lockwood, don't groan now. I am not going to extremes, but conscience and health requires a reform. We shall never imitate Miss Dr. Austin or Mrs. Dr. York. They dress very much like men. We shall imitate or follow no fashion we have ever yet seen. We shall institute a fashion which will be both economical and healthful. You may ask what we think of this institution. Some things are excellent, some things are not good. Their views and teachings in regard to health are, I think, correct. But Dr. Jackson mixes up his theology too much with health questions, which theology to us is certainly objectionable. He deems it necessary for the health of his patients to let them have pleasurable excitement to keep their spirits up. They play cards for amusements, have a dance once a week, and seem to mix these things up with religion. These things, of course, we should not countenance, yet, when I view the matter from another standpoint, I am led to inquire, what better can be done for the feeble sick who have no hope of heaven, no consolation received by the Christian? Their sources of enjoyment must be derived from a different source. While the Christian has the elevating influence of the power of grace, the sinner must draw from another source his enjoyments. If ever I prize Christ and the Christian hope, it is here, while looking upon poor invalids with but little prospect before them of ever recovering their health and having no hope for a better life. Dr. Jackson carries out his principles in regard to diet to the letter. He places no butter or salt upon his table, no meat or any kind of grease. But he sets a liberal table. Waiters are constantly in attendance, and if a dish is getting low, they remove it and replenish. The food I call liberal and good. All the difficulty is, there is danger of eating too much. All our food is eaten with a keen relish. If anyone requires a little salt, they have it supplied for the asking. A little bell sits by their plate, which they use to call the waiter, who provides them what they ask. From 12 o'clock to 2:15 are resting hours. Everything is quiet. All undress and go to bed. But I forgot to state at 10:30 comes the taking of baths. All patients who take treatment enter a large carpeted room with stove in it. All around the room are hooks. Upon these hooks are the sheets of the patients. Each has their particular hook and their number over the hook. Upon entering this room, the one who undresses first wraps a sheet about her and signifies her readiness for a bath. By removing a tin from a hook painted on the backside with brown paint, they hold that tin until the bath-tending women ask, "What does number one want?" She then tells them either sitz bath, half bath, or dry rubbing according to their prescription. They say, "All ready." Then the patient turns this tin brown side out and goes to her bath. This saves all confusion, for it is known when all are served. The bath women put on old duds reaching to the knees, are barefooted and bare-legged, and look bad. Yet their manner of dress is according to their work. I do think we should have an institution in Michigan to which our Sabbath-keeping invalids can resort. Dr. Lay is doing well. He is in the very best place he could be in to learn. He is studying all his leisure moments and is coming out a thorough convert. His wife is doing well. She is gaining, walks well for her. She is 100% better than when she came here. Dr. Lay is respected in this institution. He ranks among their physicians. I think they be unwilling to have them leave. Dr. Lay thinks some of going to New York City to Dr. Trawl's college to attend lectures, obtain a diploma, and come out a regular. Believe the Lord's hand is in our coming to this place. We shall learn all we can and try to make a right use of it.
Yesterday we attended the celebration of a wedding conducted in style, worthy of imitation. Doctor's only son, James, was married to Miss Katie Johnson. They were married in their father's cottage, and then came to the hall, where all the patients were congregated, and all the members of the household, also sick patients confined to their rooms, were brought out, laid upon sofas, and placed in rocking chairs upon the large platform occupied by those who lecture. Some were cripples, some diseased in various ways. The hall was decorated in tasteful style, nothing superfluous or silly. After the bridegroom and bride walked in, then Mrs. Dr. York conducted us to them and gave all who desired an introduction to them. There was a long table arranged with food which was placed upon plates and passed around to each one. Then waiters were constantly passing around with a supply if any more was required. Grapes were passed around in abundance. Everything was liberal, yet plain. They did not even on this occasion depart from their principles of diet, which made the thing consistent and admirable. They had extras, graham pudding with dates in it, gems mixed with raisins, custard, apple pie, and baked apples, a few other simple things. Nothing like fine flour was seen, even upon this extra occasion. I am afraid, as a people, we should not carry out our principles as well. After we had eaten, Mr. Clark, a great musician, sang and played upon an instrument of music, cabinet organ. His song was very amusing, but enough of this. I don't know when you will get another letter. I meant to send the price of those shoes, so if any wanted cheap shoes, they could get them for their children. But there are so many hands, and so many different prices and kinds of shoes, that I think it would be impossible to tell you, so that you could understand in regards to them. They had better remain until we return, I think. We hope you will enjoy yourselves well in our absence. By cheerful, above all things, be happy. Look on the bright side, and may the blessing of God rest upon you in rich abundance. We have here met with a lady who was at our home at Dansville when we were there. She introduced me to her husband. They attended our meetings. Your father gave a temperance discourse Sunday morning. She sat with her husband in their carriage just outside the curtains of the tent. They are intelligent people, and the first in the place. They invited us to visit them, and today we comply with their request. She made the remark in regard to your father's discourse that it seemed to her she was listening to Dr. Jackson again. She spoke especially of my speaking at the convention, said she had never forgotten it, that it had been a great help to her since that time, that it had especially benefited her. Someone told me that they would put in the steel-rimmed buttons left from my dress, but they cannot be found. If there is 1 dozen left, I want them sent. If not, get enough to make 1 dozen. I need them up and down the front of my short dress. That is the way they all have them. The black buttons left from my dresses I also want for my short plaid dress. There is a little box of buttons I left in the front chamber. Send them if you please. I would like to have you send to us the health journal in which Graham gives his apology for being sick. It is a few numbers stitched together, sent from Adams Center, from which we selected largely. Please send to us at our home, Dansville, New York, 1/2 dozen of our pictures, both on one card, and 1 dozen each separate. Also 2 of James, large, and 2 of mine, the best you can find. Please send a couple dozen How to Live, bound, Edson. It has been told me that you were seen riding with the Walters girl. I do not charge this upon you as a grievous sin, but you are well aware that we would not approve of your showing partiality or attention to any young miss at your age. When you are old enough to begin to manifest preference for any particular one, we are the ones to be consulted and to choose for you. I wish you to be carefree of your acts, not make yourself foolish and a subject of ridicule. You are but a boy yet. Will you please to remember it, and rely upon your parents' advice and instruction? My breakfast this morning was plenty of well-cooked mush, 1 gem, and 2 raw apples. This noon, baked potatoes with a little milk gravy and 1 gem, 1 spoonful of turnip, and 1 small apple. There is a work of reform to be carried on in your family. Your children need to be taught lessons of self-denial. They are feeble children. They have not much constitution to draw upon. Therefore, the greatest pains should be taken with their diet. They should eat the simplest food at regular intervals. Their appetites and taste should not be consulted at the injury of their stomachs. This has been done too much, and they have been made more nervous and have had less patience and self-control. Their stomachs should be consulted instead of their taste. Digestive organs should not be overtaxed, for they have but little force of constitution to draw upon. Nature should be left unburdened to carry on her work. Laura consults the taste, the appetite, more than the stomach, the digestive organs. A simple, wholesome diet should be allowed the children, and that only at regular intervals, not oftener than 3 times a day, and less would be better. We left Topsom the 15th, complying with the urgent request of the church in this place. We traveled day and night, near 1,000 miles, left Topsom Tuesday, arriving at Battle Creek Thursday, about 4 o'clock p.m. We lived on our simple fare of crackers and apples until we sat down at our own table in our own home. I did not feel justified to pay 50 cents apiece for eating at the places of refreshments when we could just as well take our simple fare and lunch it on the road. We tasted nothing warm from the commencement of the journey to the close. The first night after we came here, Rochester, New York, I dreamed of being at Dansville and of the power of God resting upon me in such abundance that I was nearly lost to everything around me, and I was exalting God and our Savior as the great physician and the deliverer of his afflicted, suffering children. The spirit of inspiration was upon me. I could not forbear, and in a most exalted, elevated strain, I was magnifying the power of Jesus and his saving grace, his exalted, spotless character, his blameless life. Dr. Jackson was near me, afraid that his patients would hear me, and wished to lay his hand upon me and hinder me, but he was awed and dared not move. He seemed held by the power of God. I awoke very happy. I live here about as I do at Dansville. Mornings I eat mush, gems, and uncooked apples. At dinner, baked potatoes, raw apples, and gems. All here pray earnestly for you, and notwithstanding Dr. Jackson's long time, I believe you will astonish the whole fraternity by a speedy recovery to health. Many times in the day you are in my mind, and I say aloud, God lives and reigns, and I believe we shall live to praise him. Edson, I hope you will not eat much sweet. Your skin is in a bad condition. You must tell Anna to get fruit instead of molasses. I know she is a great lover of sweet, but I don't want she should encourage you in eating it. Don't stint yourself on fruit. Apples at $1 a bushel are not high and are more beneficial to health. You must manage to bathe as often as twice a week. Don't neglect this. In the vision given me at Rochester, I was shown that God, in his providence, has been especially leading Brother Lay to obtain an experience that would be beneficial to himself and to the cause of God. All through your life, Sister Lay, you have had, to a greater or less degree, a diseased imagination. God designed your affliction for your good, that it should remove from you many things detrimental to you, and which had proved a leaden weight to your husband. You have not realized your condition, or the effect both your physical and mental infirmities have had upon your husband. They have made him a weak man, in every sense of the word, when he might have been strong. He has suffered in mind intensely, when it all might have been saved had you viewed calmly, rationally, and as a Christian wife should. The experience you have had at Dansville has greatly helped you to appreciate his worth. And yet, dear sister, you must view things from a higher, more elevated standpoint. I was shown that while at Dansville you both learned much, but heaven designed to accomplish a still greater work for you both if you would walk in the way that God could work for you. Dr. Lay saw errors in the chief physician at Dansville in regard to the course he pursued toward Mrs. Jackson, which he would never be influenced to imitate. He abhors all such fondness and familiarity as this man exhibited towards females. Yet I was shown that God would not have him remain a much longer time at Dansville, for he would be in danger of receiving some things or viewing some things in the same light or much in the same light as Dr. Jackson viewed them, which would hinder his influence in the position God would have him fill. The health reform is a great enterprise and is a part of the truth closely connected with present truth as the arm is connected with the body.
Dr. Lay is not qualified to carry on so large a business as you are laying out for him. His health will not admit of it, and he is not qualified to sustain and manage large interests with increase of burdens. If his wife possessed physical and mental health, he would be better prepared to bear the burdens already resting upon him. You should not suffer Dr. Lay to urge you, Dr. Byington, or any other doctor under the sun, to move in the dark. There is too much backwater now to make any very extensive moves. Dr. Lay has well done to move out in this great work, but he can bear no heavier burdens. In his desire to see the work grow, he may urge matters faster than can be well carried forward with the best results to the glory of God. Tell Sister Lampson I can see no objection to her attending Trawl's lectures and more fully qualifying herself to act her part in the institution. You should feel that God enjoins upon you to eat and drink and dress and work and study in accordance with the laws of health and life, that no organ of your body or mind shall become enfeebled. If the schoolroom is illy ventilated, do not remain in it the entire period of school hours. Ask to take your book and go into the open air. If in winter, put on your overcoats and mittens. Walk and study, for in this way you will give food to your lungs and strengthen your system to endure any amount of taxation. You have complained of headache because of heated rooms. If teachers and scholars are ignorant of the bad effects of these overheated rooms and will close the windows and take into the lungs the impure air, modestly ask the teacher to excuse you, telling them it is the positive request of your mother. If this is not granted, your only alternative is to leave school, and we will be at the expense to employ a private teacher. I feel the necessity of your regarding these matters in their true light. Act up to the knowledge and intelligence you have. Health and life are not to be sacrificed to others' whims. It was thought best to avail ourselves of the advantages of the health institution at Dansville, New York. Here we took the afflicted one, James White, after his stroke, but we did not leave God behind. We did not feel that the 3 months passed at this institution was in vain. We did not receive all these ideas and sentiments and suggestions advanced. But we did gather many things of value from those who had obtained an experience in health reform. We did not feel that there was any necessity of gathering the chaff with the wheat. Dr. Jackson carried the idea that it was the duty of all who were at the institution to pay the fiddler, whether they favored dancing or not, and those who would not do this might as well pick up their things and leave. A committee was appointed to solicit donations for this purpose. There were conscientious members of different churches as patients at the health cure, who could not unite in this exercise, for they could not harmonize such amusements as card playing and dancing with Christian principles. These decided they would have to leave. In the bathroom, I was solicited to donate to the fiddler, although Dr. Jackson had told them to pass us by, for our principles were well known. Yet this missionary upon the dancing question had not understood the matter as the doctor designed it. Without any desire to offend the doctor, and determined not to offend God, I told the lady frankly I could not use my money for any such purposes, neither would I sanction this dancing exercise by my influence. I am a follower of Jesus. That which I have written in regard to health was not taken from books or papers. As I related the things which I had been shown to others, the question was asked, "Have you seen the paper, The Laws of Life, or the Water Cure Journal?" I told them no, I had not seen either of the papers. Said they, "What you have seen agrees very much with much of their teachings." I talked freely with Dr. Lay and many others upon the things which had been shown me in reference to health. I had never seen a paper treating upon health. After the vision was given me, my husband was aroused upon the health question. He obtained books upon our eastern journey, but I would not read them. My view was clear, and I did not want to read anything until I had fully completed my books. My views were written independent of books or of the opinions of others. Now, my dear son,
I want you to qualify yourself by studious habits to attend medical college. Be careful of your means. You will want them all. If you dress and live simply and are economical, we will provide your clothing. Don't let quarters and half dollars slip from your hands here to purchase things you may think that you need. I have frequently asked myself, what could you have done with so much money? Edson, I am answered in a dream. You are not a health reformer in principle. You do not live up to the light God has given, and while you neglect one ray of light that the Lord has graciously permitted to shine upon your pathway, you will be in darkness. When you boarded yourself, did not you spend money for nuts, candies, and hurtful things, and eat these between meals and at any time? I concluded that your frequent headaches were caused by the indulgence of your appetite. I have been thinking that to take dinner with your grandparents was not the best, especially on the Sabbath. They do not prepare food in a manner I would like to have you eat. I fear that, like the Israelites, your appetite controls reason, and you lust after the flesh pots of Egypt. Do not your grandparents use pork and meat, mince pies, etc.? I must insist that while we pay your board, you be regular at your meals, for your physical and moral health. I beg of you to read in Volume 4 of Spiritual Gifts what the Lord has been pleased to communicate to your mother. I am not in good health. I am unable to labor in the cause of God or to engage in the most simple labor of the household. I have told you a period I had entered in my life untried by me, which would determine in a short period the chances of life or death with me. I have more indications of going down into the grave than of rallying. My vitality is at a low ebb. Your Aunt Sarah died passing through this critical time. My lungs are affected. Dr. Trawl said I would probably go with consumption in this time. Dr. Jackson said I should probably fail in this time. Nature would be severely taxed, and the only question would be, were there vital forces remaining to sustain the change of nature? My lungs have remained unaffected until last winter. The fainting fit I had on the cars nearly closed my life. My lungs are painful. How I shall come out, I cannot tell. I suffer much pain. I wish to write a few things to you. Brother Hull has just come in to inquire in regard to his studying to be a physician. He is conversing with your father while I am writing. I felt pained. He has proved himself worthy of encouragement to commence study. The position I believe the Lord desired you to fill. But we could not, dared not, encourage you to study. For you have shown such weakness to resist temptation. We feared to put you to any test to prove you in so important a position, for you had shown you had no strength to endure the test in smaller matters. You have to break the hands of wrong and long-formed habits and learn anew. You should be distrustful ever of following your own will, your own desire. Practice self-denial. You are watched. Your character is bearing a close test. Others note your weakness. They read these things. Little things develop a person's character and principles. They know the instructions we have given you, and they watch to see how near our instructions are followed and how sacredly regarded. You, Brother and Sister Lay, received ideas at Dansville from Dr. Jackson, which you have spoken of before the others and before your children, which will not bear to be carried out. From Dr. Jackson's standpoint, they may not appear as objectionable and dangerous, but when viewed from a Christian standpoint, they are positively dangerous. The instructions he has given in regard to shunning physical labor has proved a great injury to many. The do-nothing system is a dangerous theory. The necessity of amusements, as he teaches and enjoins upon his patients, in order to occupy the time and engage the mind, is made a substitute for useful, healthful exercise, and physical labor. Amusements excite the brain more than useful employment. Physical exercise and labor have a more happy influence upon the mind and strengthen the muscles, improve the circulation, and give the invalid the satisfaction of knowing his own power of endurance. Whereas, if he is restricted from healthful exercise and physical labor, his attention is called to himself, and he is in constant danger of thinking himself worse off than he really is, and of having established with him a diseased imagination, which causes him to have continual fear that he is overdoing, over-exercising, and overtaxing his power of endurance. At the same time, if he should engage in well-directed labor, using his strength and not abusing it, he would find that this physical exercise would prove a more powerful and effective agent in his recovery of health than even the water treatment he is receiving. The inactivity of the mental and physical powers, so far as useful labor is concerned, is that which keeps the invalid in a condition of feebleness that he feels powerless to rise above. It also gives these invalids a greater opportunity to indulge in impure imagination and self-abuse, which indulgence has brought many of them where they are in feebleness. They are told they have expended too much vitality, have labored too hard, when in 9 cases out of 10, the labor they performed was the only redeeming thing in their life and saved them from utter ruin. While their mind was thus engaged, they could not have as favorable an opportunity to debase their own bodies and complete the work of destruction for themselves. To have such cease all labor of brain and muscle is to give them an ample opportunity to be led captive by the temptations of Satan. Dr. Jackson has recommended the sexes associating together. He has instructed them to mingle together, stating that this was necessary for their health. Such teaching has done and is doing great injury to inexperienced youth and children, and is a great satisfaction to men and women of suspicious morals, a class whose passions have never been controlled, and for this reason, they are suffering from mental and physical disorders. These are instructed from a health standpoint to be in the company of the other sex, which opens a door of temptation before them. Passion rouses like a lion in some of these, and every consideration is overborne. Everything elevated is sacrificed to lustful passion. This is an age when corruption is teeming everywhere. Were the minds and bodies of men and women in a healthful condition, were the animal passions subject to the higher powers of the mind, it might be comparatively safe to teach that boys and girls, and youth of still more mature age, could be benefited by being much in each other's society, the boys with the girls with the boys. If the minds of the youth of this age were pure, innocent, and uncorrupted, the girls might have a softening influence upon the boys, and the boys with their stronger, firmer natures might have a tendency to ennoble the girls. But it is a fact, a painful fact, that there is not one girl out of 100 who is pure-minded, and there is not one boy out of 100 whose morals are untainted. It was not the taxation of study alone that was doing the work of injury to your children, but that their own wrong habits were sapping the brain and robbing the entire body of vital energy. The nervous system was becoming shattered by being often excited, and thus laying the foundation for premature and certain decay. Self-abuse is killing thousands and tens of thousands. We visited Dr. Lewis. We think him near insanity. He has a house in which he has put $230,000, and he is yet making improvements. We stepped into apparently a little bedroom, 4x6, sat upon a nice sofa, and were hoisted by an elevator up 4 stories to Dr. Lewis's room. And yet there were 4 stories above the doctor's rooms. We could look all over Boston. The doctor has been engaged in business so long that he has a diseased brain. He told us frankly all about his condition. I think this statement of his case helped Father. It certainly explained things to me I had not before understood. I see that we must all be more careful of our words and actions when Father is overwhelmed with care. We visited D.O. Lewis and found him an overworked man. He is liberal, open-hearted, and frank. The doctor has been overworking his brain. Your father enjoys the change. He resolves now not to confine himself so closely to Battle Creek. We have had excellent meetings. I wish to say to you, my children, live near to God. Do not follow the example of anyone. Christ is your pattern. Maintain a life of conscientiousness, of faithfulness, of watchfulness and prayer. In regard to your going to Trawls, you must rely upon your own resources as much as possible. We want to do our duty to our children and to our fellow men in general. Edson, don't be in great haste to leave for Trolls. Make the most of your time. Elder Merritt Kellogg will start for Trolls November 8th and will get to Battle Creek November 15th and will leave for Trolls November 20th. He is writing to Troll that he is coming from California with one more to accompany him, and in Battle Creek will be joined by several, and to hold on and not commence his lectures till he gets there with his company. Brother Kellogg has a library of the textbooks and other books that you need. He says you can have the use of these books. One can read to the company and all be benefited. He will be a great help to you all as he is one term in advance of you. He will be a father to you, an excellent counselor. He is humble and has the cause of God at heart. We hope that you will take Brother Kellogg's counsel. We made the case of your father a special subject of our prayers. The blessing and power of God rested upon your father and mother. We both fell to the floor. Your father, as he rose upon his feet to praise God, could not stand. The blessing of God rested upon him with such remarkable power. The angels of God seemed all around us. The awful, glorious presence of God was in our midst. Elder Loughborough felt the power of God all through his body. The room seemed holy. The healing power of God came upon your father, and we believe that he will be qualified by spiritual and physical strength for the great work before us. The praise of God was in our hearts and upon our lips. We shouted the high praises of God. Whoso offereth praise glorifieth God. This is the work and power of God. Our souls do magnify the Lord for all his wonderful works to the children of men. God has delivered us from discouragement and bondage of darkness. In him is no darkness at all. God will place our feet in a large place. We shall not walk in darkness, but have the light of life. Streams of light seem to come upon us from our Heavenly Father, and the room seemed to be illuminated with the presence of the Lord. I hope Edson will not get homesick. I received a good letter from Emma about 1 week since. Received another last night. We answer her letters promptly, seeking to encourage her in every way we can. We do not feel that it would be best for Emma to go to Trolls. We knew she would be homesick and lonely. But Edson, my son, be sure to anchor when you get home. Not break over the bounds of health reform. Be settled, and waver not, and Emma will gradually come to the right way of living. She cannot be expected to do it all at once. You have not been a health reformer with firm principles, Edson, on your part. Aided by enlightened conscience, Emma will be all right. Children, move from principle. I have dropped my department in reformer. I thought perhaps my productions savored so much of religious sentiments it might be best to give readers a little rest for a time. Does Trawl pick to pieces my writings and quiz them any? A very influential man has seen notice of the Health Institute in a Chicago paper, and he came here yesterday. He is a health reformer and has eaten but one meal a day for 10 years. He is a healthy-looking man and wishes to become acquainted with my husband and myself. He will spend Sabbath and first day here. He has felt no union with Dr. Trawl or Fowler because he saw that they were leaning toward infidelity. This is the great heart of the work, and if the body here is healthy, a healthful current will be diffused through the entire body. Your father's and my influence is needed here more than in any other place. We are appreciated here. We can do more good when we are appreciated than when we are not. We never had greater influence among our people than at the present time. They all look up to us as father and mother. You ask in regard to canvassers who travel and have to eat bread with swine's flesh in it. I see here a serious difficulty, but there is a remedy. Learn to make good, hygienic rolls and keep them with you. You can generally obtain hot milk, or at least a cup of hot water with milk, and this, with fruit or without fruit, will nourish the system. Many plans may be devised with some little tact and labor that many difficulties in the line of eating unwholesome food may be overcome. I advise every Sabbath-keeping canvasser to avoid meat eating. Not because it is regarded as sin to eat meat, but because it is not healthful. The animal creation is groaning. My brother,
I have some things to say to you in the name of the Lord. The matter has been opened before me, and this morning urges itself upon my mind in a most impressive manner. It is unfortunate for your wife and children that you are an invalid, because your mind is affected by the condition of your stomach, and you are often very exacting. Your health will improve when your heart is under the subduing influence of the Spirit of God, and you let the peace of God rule, not be a transient guest, in your soul. Now I wish to tell you something of what the Lord has shown me, in my own case and a score of others, in reference to diet. Some years ago, Elder Loughborough's family were living very much as yours have been, discarding salt, and rigidly following a certain course they had marked out. All were dyspeptics. Elder Loughborough did not have strength to perform his ministerial labors, and the children ate double the amount of food they should have had, because the wants of the stomach were not met. I was shown that the ideas they had received in regard to diet were not to be carried out as they had been. All ate largely, and yet were unsatisfied. Nature, I saw, had a heavy tax put upon her, and yet was not nourished. I have not time now to state all the particulars, but I was shown that death would be the result unless a change was brought about at once. But Elder Loughborough's wife was possessed of a conscientiousness that was painful, an affliction to herself and all connected with her. Sick and suffering as she was, her conscience, which certainly could not have been a sanctified conscience, held her to the extreme course she had adopted. I was shown that the Lord would have them study from cause to effect and see that it was best to break up a routine in which the system was not nourished. It was a mistake to discard salt altogether as they had done. It would be better for them to use it moderately, that instead of eating so largely of gems and potatoes and gravies and strong sauce, they would be benefited by using a little meat 2 or 3 times a week. Well, Elder Loughborough changed his diet and began to gain in strength. His wife made no change, and she died about a year after I had labored with them so earnestly. I have been shown by the Lord that you are making a mistake in your own diet. A change is necessary for you health-wise. How can you recommend that which you call health reform when it does so little for you? Just study this matter in a different light from that in which you viewed it heretofore. There is a wide difference in constitutions and temperaments, and the demands of the system differ greatly in different persons. What would be food for one might be poison for another. So precise rules cannot be laid down to fit every case. I cannot eat beans, for they are poison to me. But for me to say that for this reason no one must eat them would be simply ridiculous. I cannot eat a spoonful of milk gravy or milk toast without suffering in consequence. But other members of my family can eat these things and realize no such effect. Therefore, I take that which suits my stomach best, and they do the same. We have no words, no contention, all moves along harmoniously in my large family, for I do not attempt to dictate what they shall or shall not eat. Many years ago, while at Dr. Jackson's, I undertook to leave it, salt, off entirely, because he advocated this in his lectures. But he came to me and said, "I request you not to come into the dining hall to eat. A moderate use of salt is necessary to you. Without it, you will become a dyspeptic. I will send your meals to your room." After a while, however, I again tried the saltless food, but was again reduced in strength and fainted from weakness. Although every effort was made to counteract the effect of the 6 weeks' trial, I was all summer in so feeble a condition that my life was despaired of. I was healed in answer to prayer, else I should not have been alive today. I write this for your good. I am pained to see you suffering so much, and wish that you might have better health. It never pays to take extreme views of health reform. From the light that God has given me, I am convinced that a change of diet will benefit your health. On a certain night, my mind was again deeply exercised in reference to students going to Ann Arbor. It was shown me that this ought not to be, unless it was deemed essential for their receiving medical completion of their education in that line. All cannot discern the dangers which will have to be met in Ann Arbor, the temptations that will surely come through association. I would advise no one to go there unless it is a positive necessity. These matters have been most clearly presented to me. There is no need now for any special alteration in our dress. The plain, simple style of dress now worn, made in the most healthful way, demands no hoops and no long trails, and is presentable anywhere. And these things should not come in to divert our minds from the grand test which is to decide the eternal destiny of a world, the commandments of God, and the faith of Jesus. We are nearing the close of this world's history. A plain, direct testimony is now needed, as given in the Word of God, in regard to the plainness of dress. This should be our burden. The reform dress, which was once advocated, proved a battle at every step. Members of the church, refusing to adopt this healthful style of dress, caused dissension and discord. With some, there was no uniformity in taste in the preparation of the dress as it had been plainly set before them. This was food for talk. The result was that the objectionable features, the pants, were left off. The burden of advocating the reform dress was removed because that which was given as a blessing was turned into a curse. There were some things that made the reform dress a decided blessing. With it, the ridiculous hoops which were then the fashion could not possibly be worn. The long dress skirts trailing on the ground and sweeping up the filth of the streets could not be patronized. But a more sensible style of dress has now been adopted, which does not embrace these objectionable features. We need nothing to come in now to make a test for God's people that shall make more severe for them the test they already have. The enemy would be pleased to get up issues now to divert the minds of the people and get them into controversy over the subject of dress. Let our sisters dress plainly, as many do, having the dress of good material, durable, modest, appropriate for this age, and let not the dress question fill the mind. The Lord has not moved upon any of our sisters to adopt the reform dress. The difficulties that we once had to meet are not to be brought in again. There was so much resistance among our own people that it was removed from them. It would then have proved a blessing. But there must be no branching out now into singular forms of dress. There have been plenty of strange doings in Battle Creek with the bicycle craze, which has greatly displeased the Lord and greatly dishonored the cause of present truth. God holds those responsible who have expended money in this direction. They have greatly injured the influence of the work and the cause of God. Let there be no tests manufactured now to absorb time and minds to bring in new reforms. We have now to face tremendous issues, and all the time and power of our thought are to be called to the living issues before us. I know that the voice raised to create something new in the matter of dress now should be quenched. Put all that there is of you in working to get as close as possible to perishing souls. See if you cannot, by a consistent, harmonious, all-round character, and by the presentations of truth to individuals who are out of Christ, save some souls from ruin. I beg of our people to walk carefully and circumspectly before God. Follow the custom of dress in health reform, but do not again introduce the short dress and pants unless you have the word of the Lord for it. My dear brother, as I have before written to you, I know that the Lord had placed you in a very responsible position, standing as you do as the greatest physician in our world, a man to whom the Lord has given understanding and knowledge, that you may do justice and judgment, and reveal the true missionary spirit in the institution which is to represent truth in contrast with error. Oh, how it has hurt me to have blocks thrown in my way in regard to this subject. Some have said, "Sister White eats cheese, and therefore we are at liberty to eat cheese." I have tasted cheese once or twice, but that is a different thing from making it an article of diet. Once, when at Minneapolis, I sat down at a table on which there was some cheese. I was quite sick at the time, and some of my brethren told me that they thought if I ate a little cheese, it might do me good. I ate a small piece, and from then it has been reported in large assemblies that Sister White eats cheese. I have not had meat in my house for years, but do not give up the use of meat because Sister White does not eat it. I would not give a farthing for your health reform if that is what it is based upon. I want you to stand in your individual dignity and in your individual consecration before God. In the night seasons, I have had conversations with you. Battle Creek is not the only place to which we are to look for the education of nurses and other medical missionary workers. In every sanitarium established, preparation must be made to train young men and young women to be medical missionaries. Never are we to rely upon worldly recognition and rank. Never are we, in the establishment of institutions, to try to compete with worldly institutions in size or splendor. I have the tenderest feelings toward you, Dr. Kellogg. There is no one on earth who understands you as well as I do, and no one else who will tell you of your dangers. When the Lord gives me a message for you, I shall surely give it to you. The principles of health reform mean a great deal to us. When the message first came to me, I was weak and feeble, fainting once or twice a day. I was pleading with God for help, and He opened before me the great subject of health reform. He instructed me that those who were keeping His commandments must be brought into sacred relation with Himself, and that by temperance in eating and drinking, they must keep mind and body in the most favorable condition for His service. I was instructed that the use of flesh meat has a tendency to animalize the nature and to rob men and women of the love and sympathy which they should feel for everyone. We are built up from that which we eat, and those whose diet is largely composed of animal food are brought into a condition where they allow the lower passions to assume control of the higher powers of the being. I accepted the light on health reform as it came to me. I took my position knowing that the Lord would strengthen me, and He has strengthened me. I have better health today, notwithstanding I am 76 years old, than I had in my younger days. I thank God for the principles of health reform, and if there are any here today who have backslidden in this respect, I say to them that God calls upon them to be converted and to take their position in accordance with the light He has given. In denying perverted appetite, you will place yourself where God can cooperate with you. We do not mark out any precise line to be followed in diet. There are many kinds of wholesome food. But we do say that flesh meat is not the right food for God's people. It animalizes human beings. In a country such as this, where there are fruits, grains, and nuts in abundance, how can one think that he must eat the flesh of dead animals? This is what we need: simple food prepared in a simple, wholesome, and relishable manner. We have no butter and no meat on our table. We do not think fried potatoes are healthful, for there is more or less grease or butter used in preparing them. Good baked or boiled potatoes, served up with cream and a sprinkling of salt, are the most healthful. The remnants of Irish and sweet potatoes are prepared with a little cream and salt and rebaked, and not fried. They are excellent. I have had a good appetite and relish my food, and am perfectly satisfied with the portion which I select, which I know does not injure my digestive organs. Others can eat food which I cannot, such as lentils and beans. While many of the workers in the W have heard the truth of the third angel's message, there are many more who have never had it presented to them in its fullness. These women will not be condemned for not receiving that which they have not heard. I have been shown that if the Sabbath truth is presented to these, many will accept it. We should not neglect them or treat them as if they were opposed to the cause of present truth. By showing ourselves interested in their work of temperance, we shall open the way to give them the light we have. Released June, 1973.